I'm
Let's go, Grandpa.
Honestly, I'm shook. I'm shook. I hate that we're starting like this. I hate that we're starting with the end of my career, basically, because I've just been informed by Alabaster that I'm the oldest person on today's show.
That's very true.
So this is Charles McDonald. Hello, Charles McDonald. You are how old?
I am 27, and I'm here to show you your mortality.
Dear. Gojo.
Yes.
Yes. I didn't mean the end of my career in that sense.
Old man Pablo!
Get off my lawn. Get off my lawn.
Wow, what a save by Alabaster with the theme song to try and drop over that glory. See, this is what happens. You get old, things start to get harder to process here, the filter breaks down, and
I forget.
Where we leave you.
Am I on a fake television show where we debate nothing that is live, or are we on a fake television show that debates nothing that's still in the waiting room where we get off takes that would actually get us fired about our colleagues and fellow employees? Hello, I am Pablo Torre, 36 years old, and feeling every part of that in my vertebra. Real neck issues. That's Mike Golic Jr. over here. Yes, figured that part out. And yeah, our new friend, Charles McDonald. Welcome for the win of NFL Twitter fame. General cool young person here to make us feel older, but also somehow younger at the same time.
I feel like Gojo, he's become what you were for Tony Kornheiser on all these years.
Oh, that's very funny.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
And honestly, I'm already at the pace of problematic commentary that Tony Kornheiser is at. At this rate, sharing thoughts that should not be shared in public with young people. Gojo, I have so many questions for you that I hope we can get to in the doing of the show, because let me just start with this before we get into like the topics here. How many times have you cried, just shed tears over the last like 7 days or so?
So there were no tears shed, but like, it really ruined what was supposed to be my off week last week.
Oh my
like,
God.
I finally
you were off last week.
So like, so I had radio, but I've been calling college football games all year. Last week was the first week all season where I haven't had a game to prepare for. So I was like, man, I'm going to get sleep. I'm finally going to watch Insecure because I've missed every episode of this season so far. And I was going to catch up on all of it. I'm going to make sure I get Succession done on time. I was going to finally watch, you know, the 10 Rings. No, none of it happened because Tuesday, Brian Kelly decided that my freedom and peace were no longer things of value. And the rest of the time since then has just been spent aimlessly wandering between radio interviews and my cell phone.
Yeah. Charles, I don't know how you felt watching that Marcus Freeman video. But dude, I kind of started to tear up in ways that confused me. Like my wiring was very crossed. Like I shouldn't feel this way towards a team I have no real emotional investment in it.
Yeah, I was kind of feeling the same way because I don't care for Notre Dame. No offense. Like, it's just
none taken.
They're one of those programs where it's like, it's kind of fun to watch them lose and mess up on the biggest stage. So when I was watching like the Marcus Freeman video, I felt good. And I was like, I'm not familiar with Notre Dame, like evoking these feelings out of me where I feel like going and strap up and play for Notre Dame right now. But that was a really cool moment. I thought that was like good that he put the center back on like this year and the seniors that still have to finish out this year, because he's right. It's not done. And it's a really awkward time for Brian Kelly to leave, but you know, that's just kind of the college coaching cycle nowadays.
But like, to both of your guys' point, this is also uncomfortable for me because I am not used to people saying nice things about us. Like, I fully accept that while I love Notre Dame and it has given me a lot, like, for everyone else, like, we're the Yankees. We're all these teams that everybody hates. And so I'm like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, what's going to be the first thing that happens where people are going to turn back on us?
No, Grojo, Notre Dame has actually become Rudy, which is bizarre. Like, the program itself as a whole has become the cliche that apparently is not actually true or based in reality. But we can get into more of this stuff as I guess this fake television show rolls on. But I hear in the background Alabaster shuffling papers. So Alabaster, where did you want us to start?
I just hope that Gojo had a great week off with his family. But we
family
will start here. And that is with the Ravens. And how do you explain Lamar Jackson and the Ravens' recent struggles?
So, Charles, I want you to take this, not just because I kind of fell asleep at parts before waking up for the end of that Ravens game, but also because I genuinely want to know, how do you see this? How bad is it?
I mean, I think the first place you can go to is just injuries. They have so many injuries, especially on the offensive line. You know, speaking of Notre Dame, like not having Ronnie Stanley this year has been a huge hurt for them. They've had other injuries on the offensive line. They lost both their running backs, Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins, before the start of the season. Like they just cut Le'Veon Bell. So I think that they're kind of going through a situation right now where they're still kind of trying to figure out what they want to be on offense. And I think as you do that with shuffling personnel, Lamar is someone who I think is like very hyper aware of like what's going on around him. But I think it's caused him to like try to put on the Superman cape a little bit too often, you know, during the course of the season. And luckily for them, like they've been able to win like these crappy games up until yesterday. And even then they still had another chance to win the game. So, you know, they're in a spot where I don't think Lamar kind of trusts what's going on around them. I think the Steelers game yesterday, especially in the second half, was kind of like the perfect encapsulation of it, where as soon as the ball snaps in that second half, before the blockers even get set up, before the Steelers off or defensive line can even start coming after him, he's already bailing and creating a harder situation for players who aren't normally starters in the first place. So everything comes discombobulated. At times, it looks like an offense where they're just kind of like in the backyards drawing up plays in the stand and hoping that stuff works. And when you have someone as talented as Lamar Jackson, that can work. But I think we've seen that it's not really a sustainable plan for them. And it just kind of looks like sloppy football. Like I know that going into yesterday's game, they were the number one seed in the AFC, but that's not like a normal number one seed quality team that you see from year to year. So I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up like keep falling down the standings as the season goes along, because you can't really count that you're going to win these close games over and over again. But it's just kind of weird to see a team that's like in contention for the number one seed also look very bad. And a quarterback that we know to be pretty good, just kind of pressing issues and not looking as good as he usually does.
Yeah, the tough part with this is, too, these are, like, a lot of the things that they're defaulting to when it gets tough are exactly what we'd expect and what everyone knows. And the whole charge for this team going back to this last offseason was, all right, you've got to do more in developing the passing attack for them. And that took a major hit early in the season because Rashad Bateman started the year hurt, because so much of that was in flux because of the injuries that Charles just mentioned. And so now when the going gets tough, they're still trying to develop that passing attack. And so when it gets to the thick of it, you go with what you trust, which is way too much Lamar Jackson design rushing attempts at certain times and force feeding the ball to Mark Andrews in a way that when it's a little bit off, really kind of puts a scud missile into the side of your offense. So that's been the difficulty. To Charles's point is Lamar got really used to being Superman and it working for an entire half of the season, but there's just not enough quality depth on the roster now because of all that injury to be able to trust them, even in like the chaos burger that is the AFC this season. As we get further and further down the stretch, like that's just not a sustainable style of football, and none of the next step things were able to develop for them in time to become viable options when it gets important.
It does feel though like the one thing I am 100 million percent secure in is John Harbaugh's faith in Lamar Jackson. Like, and that obviously can spiral out of control. I don't think the going for two at the end of the game to win the thing was an example of the spiral necessarily, because the play design, I don't know how you guys saw it, but the play design clearly, like, this was going to work if Mark Andrews held on to that football, right? Like, this was Lamar Jackson giving us a different set of headlines if that had just broken by centimeters a slightly different way. But I wonder, like, if you're a player, right? If you're Lamar Jackson specifically, the whole story of how John Harbaugh has coached you from the beginning, starting with that, I mean, obviously gets into the regular season, but then in that first playoff game he plays where he has, like, more interceptions than completions at the first half, the second half he sticks with them while people are chanting for Joe Flacco. Like, ever since that, it's been very clear. John Harbaugh's going to ask Lamar what he wants to do. Lamar's always going to say, yes, please go for it, which literally happened earlier this season. And then it's situations like this, he's always going to trust his dude. And I think that is both the problem and the solution to all of the problems that they may be facing, as you guys have been alluding to.
Yeah, and it's tough because, you know, you go through the whole game and it's kind of a mess for Lamar and the whole offense. And then at the end of the game, when you got to have it, you're down 20-13. Zoop, they run right down the field. Lamar's throwing dots all over the field.
Yeah, less than 2 minutes.
Right, yep. Less than 2 minutes to get right down to the goal line, score a touchdown. And then, like you said, if TJ Watt isn't like an inch over from where he was, or Mark Andrews was a little shallower, maybe that pass is caught in. I don't know if it's like a completely different conversation, because I'd still be wondering, like, you guys are still piddling around with these crap teams and you can't get past the finish line in an easy way. But, you know, they'd be 9-3 and still top of the conference. But, you know, it's hard because Lamar, he does have these moments where, you know, he's doing a little bit too much, and that can lead to sacks, interceptions, fumbles, bad plays. But it's kind of hard to turn the other cheek and say, well, we're going to take the ball out of his hands. Well, I don't want to do that either, because he's Lamar Jackson.
Right.
Yeah, no, he's the one. But, like, it's kind of coming in the same year. Now, Lamar's reasons are a little bit different. But when you look across the board, like, the young quarterbacks, like the MVP caliber ones that we've talked about, have all kind of had to deal with, in some way, shape, or form, losing the big play as their best weapon, and those home run highlight reel things that we'd seen from Mahomes, from Josh Allen, from Lamar Jackson. Like, the world changing into defenses, kind of like the way the NFL is playing out this year, is eerily reminiscent of the Big 12 like 2 years ago, when Jalen Hurts got to Oklahoma and everyone decided, hey, we're done letting you just go bombs away and hit big plays all the time. You're going to have to live another way. And so now we're seeing like much more conservative offense kind of win the day, at least on that side of the AFC, where we look at the Patriots and we look at the Colts and we go, all right, like, you can control the line of scrimmage, and that seems about as valuable as it's ever been. Like, it's always there, but especially in this season, like, to Charles's point, we're going to assess these problems a lot more immediately with the Ravens now, but I didn't need this weekend to happen to tell me that the Patriots are a better football team than them right now. Like, you can be the one seed all you want. Like, we knew which team has been more consistent and trustworthy as of late, and surprise, surprise, we have to talk about New England again.
But meanwhile, surprise, surprise, Ben Roethlisberger is still alive. Like, and I mean that in the playoff sense and also in the biological sense. Like, is anyone more Undertaker meme than that dude? I feel like every other week it's like, and there lies a Hall of Fame quarterback, RIP, and then there he is again. And I know quarterback record is not the same as quarterback skill and all of that, but Charles, like, how? Why? Like, what am I missing here?
I don't know. I think with this, it's just kind of like Mike Tomlin teams are unkillable until the very end. I mean, even last year when they were like 11-0, that team was not very good. At least the offense wasn't very good. And I think we saw that like when they lost to the Browns in the wild card game and kind of got shut out. But Ben Roethlisberger is so – it's just annoying, because you have these moments where – like last week against the Bengals, where it's just like, holy crap, like, how are you still out here, like, starting quarterback in the NFL? And then you get yesterday where, you know, he's actually pretty solid. But I just can't really get a handle on Ben Roethlisberger. He's not aging like someone like Tom Brady. He's aging like a normal old quarterback, and you get a lot of the bad plays.
He's aging like me. Yes, right? I feel like Ben just Roethlisberger. Like you.
You're the Ben Roethlisberger of this show, just in terms of age, not anything else.
Thank you for being very specific on the constraints of how I am like Ben Roethlisberger. Yes.
But, yeah, I think it's interesting that yesterday you got the reports that he's telling people that this is probably going to be his last season.
Exactly.
Pittsburgh, and he just came off like one of his better games of the season too.
I do love that he's saying that, and everyone around's got to be like, yeah, we know.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like Ben's kind of the last one to know here. And again, to Charles's point, this is always going to be about what Mike Tomlin can do, how different that defense is when TJ Watt is out there on the field consistently. Like, surprise, surprise, the way that they can look at all this. But I don't know. Ben Roethlisberger is aging like someone who eats P.F. Chang's as much as he does. Like, as someone who frequents that establishment, it is not going to help you age the same way that, like, avocado ice cream and not eating nightshades will. I'm shocked.
I do love the idea of a professional athlete being, like, sponsored by Crab Rangoon. It's like, that also is me. Let's be honest.
I love nothing more than a good Crab Rangoon. I'll just say that. I don't know if we're ready, if we've got the Crab Rangoon stats ready or not, Alabaster, but anytime you want to make the move to that, just let me know.
The Crab Rangoon stats are my cholesterol levels, which are, much like allegedly Ben Roethlisberger's, elevated.
So are mine.
Yeah. You know what, guys? We're not so different. We're not so different on Debatable today. Alabaster, What do you want us to take on next?
Yeah, shout out to all the PF Chang's apps. Those lettuce wraps also fire.
Lettuce. Yeah. Oh, thanks for the lettuce. You're doing a lot of work there, lettuce. Really making my digestive system that much less doomed.
Right before I go to the orange peel beef, I'm going to consume some of these lettuce wraps to balance the scales of justice here.
Our next topic is... should Gardner Minshew start over Jalen Hurts next game?
So I love how infuriated like Jalen Hurts must be by this, because for a couple of reasons, right? Like, okay, Gardner Minshew, who is once again David Arquette dressed as Baker Mayfield for Halloween, he is somebody who just beat the Jets, was wildly accurate. He's also somebody who does, like, historically make really strong first impressions. And I say that in the sense of, like, his debut in the NFL, his first game last season. Like, he's always the dude who's like, wait a minute, this guy is super accurate and is exactly what the guy he replaced kind of isn't. And now you have a bye week for all of Philly sports radio to marinate in the idea that actually – Gardner Minshew is a starting quarterback. I do not believe he should be a starting quarterback, but I believe that he is the perfect, most infuriating version of a backup, both for the opponent and for the starting quarterback.
Yeah, because he's competent at times. And when you play a defense as bad as the Jets, who, let us not forget, they just spent a month giving up 45 points per game, that I would hope that Gardner Minshew can come out and look competent against, quite honestly, one of the worst defenses I've ever seen, like, within the past decade of football. So, no, I don't think that Gardner Minshew should start over Jalen Hurts. To me, this game, this environment is, like, the exact space that someone like Gardner Minshew can come out and make you ask these questions. You know, should Gardner Minshew be the starting quarterback after a game where an already bad Jets defense is undermanned and missing players and getting steamrolled by literally everyone they play against? No, I don't think that's the case. I think that Jalen Hurts should still be back there. But like you said, it's frustrating for Hurts. It's frustrating for the Eagles. It's frustrating for, you know, even Jaguars fans at times to see Gardner Minshew come in and play well, because we know he's capable of putting up good numbers and playing effective football. But as the starts kind of expand and you start to get more tape on him and you defenses start to realize how limited he actually is as a player, it's pretty easy to stop him and shut him down. So, you know, we've seen Gardner Minshew have a nice start here and there, but I kind of think we already know the answer to whether or not he can be like the long-term starting quarterback for a franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gardner Minshew's the guy your girlfriend cheats on you with in high school, who then never leaves the hometown. Like, he's got a ceiling. And he can be very good in all those ways. He can be a ton of fun. Shows up in the leather jacket, punches his dad in the chest after games. Like, it all plays. And it all, like, builds into the exact mythology around backup quarterbacks that makes these people the most loved guy on almost every team. All he did was punch the card that ensures – I talked about this with Colt McCoy a couple weeks ago. As backup quarterback in the NFL, if you want to last, like, a decade plus, you got to re-up the subscription every once in a while. Gardner just re-upped the subscription. And for the Eagles, like, so, like, he's good. He's going to play in the NFL probably for a long time as a backup, because he's going to be able to do this every once in a while. For the Eagles, it would make zero sense. Like, they just cashed in that first-round pick by way of Carson Wentz going out there and hitting that playing time bonus the other day in Indianapolis. This is all about finding out how much you trust Jalen Hurts. And so far this season, I don't think it's been enough to say he's the starter beyond this year. Like, Jalen Hurts, another guy I think is going to make a great high-end backup in the NFL and going to be able to come in and win you games in certain stretches. But for the Eagles, you've still got to do your due diligence for the rest of the season in finding out how high that level can potentially go for him before you figure out what you're going to do with those first-round picks. Gardner Minshew does not help you one bit towards that effort. So putting him out there as the starter if Jalen Hurts is available makes no sense from that perspective.
Yeah, and I think you kind of look at it just in terms of, like, floors and upsides, where at least with Jalen Hurts, I know that on the days where he's not, you know, throwing the ball very well, and you see this with Lamar sometimes too, we're at least going to be able to run the ball and figure something out that way. Like, you go back to the Saints game a few weeks ago, and the Saints defense, they've put the clamps on everybody in the run game, and they come out and rush for like 250 yards and three touchdowns, and Jalen Hurts was basically the big reason behind that. So I think you get into a spot where the upside with Jalen Hurts is a lot higher than Gardner Minshew. And like you said, if you've got three first-round picks, I don't really care what Gardner Minshew can do. I want to know if Jalen Hurts can come out and throw the ball a little bit more effectively and efficiently. If he can do that, then you're kind of talking about maybe a guy who can be here for the long term. And I think one thing that also helps Jalen Hurts is next year's quarterback class is like not the most exciting. So maybe if he can just come in and just be competent over these last five games, he can probably get the starting job for next year. And then after that, it's a real competition to see what he can do long term.
But Alabaster threw down a card that I want him to put back on there, because he underlined a phrase in it that just shows you, though, why it is that Gardner Minshew is this guy who is both fun and incredibly annoying to talk about.
I
because he wins
Gardner
press conferences. Oh, that is that why? Okay, there it is.
Oh, like an actual Gardner.
Yeah. That's a good attempt at cleaning up a mistake there, Alabaster.
It's
but
a
no,
great move
I
to highlight
him.
The statement next
yeah.
to
there
it
we
to
go.
Distract the eyes away
there
from
it
the
is.
Spelling mistake.
There it is. No, that's classic close-up magician move, Gojo. Focus on this, not on this. Yes, exactly right. This thumb.
Oh, sorry.
Coming off of my
I really don't like the way it looked for me, like tickling over here next to you. considering what the Cardinals did on social media when they beat the Bears this weekend, phallic objects need to be treated with great care anytime they're near a screen on the internet.
Okay. Yeah, I remember I just opened
Let's
up
talk
Twitter.
About the bean.
I was like, yep. What is this white covered thing that is sitting
wait,
on?
Let me pull this up.
Like, yeah. I see ads for that thing on Instagram all the time.
Yeah, I was.
what's concerning, of course, Gojo, is that is an algorithmically designed ad for.
Yeah, believe
you.
Me, I'm trying to figure it out too.
Know. Are you really trying to figure it out, or do you know? You
no.
just don't want to tell us.
Wait, did they? They didn't. Oh no, I was gonna say, did they delete it? No, they still got
no,
it.
No, it's still
they
up
better.
There.
I mean, it's just.
I mean, like,
what is
the Cardinals smiling for sure though, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And I was confused. At first I didn't even see the Cardinal like on the top of it. So I'm like scrolling around through, you know, this curve shaped thing that's covered in white stuff. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And then I see the Cardinal on top. So very good job by the Cardinal social media by making me feel a little bit inappropriate at home.
Once again, this is a reminder. Every organization, especially one that works in social media, needs a disinterested young person at the end of the process here. Like, because you're all sitting there thinking, oh, we got this clever L made out of their cherished bean. We're going to show these Chicago Bears. You need that disinterested millennial that's going to be at the end like, oh, no, they're going to roast you for this.
or just like an on-call urologist to be like, yeah, that looks like genitals. Probably... Get out of that one. Looks like a genital.
It's time to play America's favorite game. Are these genitals?
Relatedly, please stitch that clip of Gojo saying that to the clip of Gojo tickling his mic and do your photoshopping. Debatable Hive.
Oh, this place is terrible.
Yeah.
Alabaster.
Did you just Roman Roy our sweet little fake television show?
Spoiler alert. Spoiler
wow.
alert.
Wow.
Alabaster, the most offensive thing that's been said so far is potentially spoiling the penultimate episode of Succession.
Apologies to our fans. All right, our next topic. Does it now feel inevitable that Bama is going to win the Natty again this year?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And I say this.
Charles, are you okay, man?
No, I'm not okay. I was like tentatively excited going up to the game because, I mean, Georgia, it's not the first time Georgia's played Alabama, obviously, and Alabama has won like every single time. So, you know, even going back to like, I had some friends over this weekend and they were talking about the 2008 blackout game. Like, that's how far back this embarrassment goes with Alabama versus Georgia. But, you know, you watch Auburn kind of beat up on Alabama a little bit. You're like, dang, like if Auburn can do this, why can't Georgia do this? So I started to get like a little bit excited, and then, you know, they quickly reminded us who was the big brother over here in this relationship, which was very frustrating. But yeah, it made it seem like they're absolutely going to win the national championship because if they can score 41 on Georgia's defense, I don't see why they can't score 41 on literally any other defense that they're going to see throughout the rest of the playoffs, including Georgia's defense again. And it's just kind of frustrating.
Well, let me ask you before, Gojo, I mean, Charles is using the word frustrating. I also feel like Alabama just makes you feel stupid. Like, they made me feel stupid. Like, why did I waste time wondering if it was going to be somebody else, when clearly, yes, it is going to be Alabama.
Yeah, run from it, dread it all you want. Either way, Alabama shows up all the same to snap their fingers and destroy us all. Like, I can give you a bunch of football reasons why maybe it won't work out that same way. Like, Alabama made some changes on the offensive line in the middle of that Auburn game that went more holdovers against this Georgia game. That group outperformed basically everything that we have seen. We don't know what the status of John Metchie, who's their second best wide receiver, is going to be going forward. But again, all these are football reasons that affect normal teams. Time and space and Nick Saban means that none of those matter, and that he is going to find a way to once again be better than all of us in a year where a lot of people looked at them and said, well, you know what? There are reasons they might take a step back finally. One of them before the season, first and foremost, was we don't know what this Bryce Young fella is going to do. Well, he's probably going to lift up the Heisman Trophy this weekend, and that's probably going to be the end of all that. So, yeah, Papa Nick is always right. He can be out here and now sprinkle yummies into his press conference.
Oh, my God.
Because that's a normal thing. Like, that's how cocky Nick Saban is, where he knows he can go and just drop that in the press conference setting because he is untouchable right now.
No, the rat poison that you usually give us is usually fatal, but the rat poison that you put out there, and by the way, the you here is us, broadly speaking, the three of us and our colleagues, that you put out there this week was yummy.
Made me want to puke. Yeah, there's just a point like where you know the dam's about to break, and I think when Jameson Williams caught that first touchdown, I was like, oh, okay. I don't know if we have the horses to keep up with that, which is pretty disheartening after seeing how dominant Georgia was all season. I mean, I think they gave up like 83 points all season, and they gave up 41 on Saturday. So, you know, it was definitely very humbling, I'll say that. And I think it just feels inevitable that Alabama's going to win the championship again. But I do hope that there's a rematch because maybe there's spaces where Kirby can close the margins a little bit. But, you know, it just kind of feels like another example of Nick Saban always having the upper hand.
It is Nick Saban is beating his team from 10 years ago. Like, Georgia is just Alabama before they did the software update. Like, you don't have to win with a dynamic five-star quarterback, and we're going to have a soul-crushing defense like they did in 2011 and 2012, and that's going to be good enough. And Nick Saban's here to remind you that, like, no, I turned the page on this, so now all the rest of you will either follow or you will suffer this fate.
Yeah.
So this statistic, which I'm seeing for the first time as I see most statistics on this show. ESPN 300 recruits the last 3 years. Alabama has 77. Cincinnati has 2. And congratulations, Cincinnati. I mean, you will be in the sun as America's underdog. And we will watch one of those videos that should have like a live leak image in the left-hand corner because it's going to be gross.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's going to be gross.
I am sorry, Desmond Ridder. At least he'll be getting paid for this next year.
That is very, very, very true here. And by the way, it's worth saying for the uninitiated, if Cincinnati gets boat raced, it doesn't mean they didn't belong here. Did you really want to see that Oklahoma State team sneak their way in? Because I was at the Big 12 championship. You don't want to be out there. You might think you want to be out there, but I promise you don't want to be out there.
When you get out here, you're not going to be out here no more.
That line looks about right. Like, again, it'll be fun. There's some fun football matchup stuff that's in here that's going to work out, but like none of it's going to change the outcome of that game. We all know what's
going to happen. Gojo, as soon as you start describing something as quote unquote fun, it's like when you describe, how was your date go? Oh, it was fun. You know, it's like, oh, she's fun. She's fun. Really not attracted at all, but fun. Yeah.
It's a fun little night.
Cincinnati, yeah. You're going to make someone else very happy. You're gonna find your person.
Yeah. You're like a Cincinnati 10, but a Tuscaloosa 2. On that rating scale.
Damn. Lord. Hey, listen, on the upside, y'all get to keep Luke Fickell. It looks like he's gonna stick around. That's cool.
Yeah, Gojo from his mountaintop of Marcus Freeman vibes. You get to keep that dude. Congratulations. We have the half black, half Asian.
Yeah.
I'm gonna reference Ime Udoka here in terms of handsomeness. But yeah, man, absolutely. Just a handsome young players coach that's putting on viral videos immediately.
I'll say it. We have the handsomest coach in college football.
Oh, easily.
I don't think it's close.
I don't think it is either.
Yeah.
I don't think it is either.
I was even swimming a little bit when I was like, damn, okay, Marcus Freeman, I see you out here.
Yeah.
Look.
Go off, King.
Hold on. It's Wikipediaing Marcus Freeman. Yep, Marcus Freeman. I'm also older than Marcus Freeman. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that is like... And like
that's
and
just
like,
and that shouldn't be Gojo for me so, or for anyone else who's 36. That should not be.
I'm sorry, it blew me because like Marcus is certainly, you know, young, but it was tracking that way. Like I didn't know Lincoln Riley was 33 when he took over at Oklahoma,
yeah, yeah.
And that Pat Fitzgerald was, I believe, 31 when he took over at Northwestern.
Like there was a point in time where hell? Pat Fitzgerald was 31. I thought he was like 52 forever.
Oh, that is true. Pat Fitzgerald was born a teenager and was giving his fellow high school students lectures on underage drinking while they were in class together.
Yes, had the receding hairline buzz cut since eighth grade.
Born with a state trooper.
All right,
cut.
Easy.
Alabaster, you want us to play a game, is what those multicolored letters are suggesting.
That's right. And that game is Whodunit. We'll give you a quote. You guys come together over a minute and tell us who done it. Our first quote. I'm a lot like Tua. I can throw 2-yard passes to the left. And your options are Marcus Peters, Logan Ryan, Jalen Ramsey, or Pablo's beloved Ryan Fitzpatrick.
What about
okay, this can't be Ryan it can't be Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't know the answer, but it's not Ryan Fitzpatrick. Because I would have known about it. I would have known the answer would be Ryan Fitzpatrick if it was Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. Marcus
Peters. That is true. Everyone of the Harvard listserv gets an email sent out when he does anything.
Yeah. Marcus right. Peters has been out since like August, so can't be him either. And
yep.
Jalen Ramsey, they were playing Jacksonville yesterday, I want to say. Which leaves us with Logan Ryan.
The powers of deduction compel us, Gojo. Do you agree? Or what are you thinking here?
B. Yeah, I already knew the answer to this question.
Yeah, again, making saying. Something that, by the way, as the son of a urologist, I'm going to say also Gojo's hand signal there looked like genitals. What are you doing?
Listen, man, I blame the Cardinals. I'm going to keep going back to this one. They put this, they incepted. Also, like, it's a B, Pablo. At some point, maybe this is like a weird Rorschach test for where your head's at today. So maybe take a look in the mirror, all right, old timer?
I mean, I'm just saying. All right, let's go with what is definitely not the genital, but the letter B.
A lot like Tua, yeah. As a lefty. I can throw 2-yard passes to the left.
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah. Damn.
Salty. And I get it. I get it. Because, like, I mean, the Giants, they lost yesterday. But, I mean, anyone who's played competitive sports, like, I feel like you know when you lose to someone who is not quite the best at their position. It irks you a little bit more than it does. And Tua, he's been the target of several DBs now because I think the way that he plays football is not the most challenging at times. I don't think the Dolphins like ask him to do too much. And he's executed what he's been asked to do over the past month. But, you know, when you're running a lot of RPOs and slants and hoping Jalen Waddles and his 4-2 speak and break one loose for you. I don't think that a lot of opposing defensive players respect that style of play, which, you know, lends him to being the target. But beat Tua if you're going to say stuff like this in the post-conference.
Yeah.
That I mean, usually doesn't speak very well to whoever's on the receiving end of that, right? You beat us with the really easy thing over and over. Like,
right.
if I'm Tua, also, the easy rebut is, have you seen who is blocking for me?
Right.
Would you like me to really drop back there and do anything that requires a longer time period? Because I could show you how that works out, and it's the entire first half of the season.
So on this, because Alabaster threw on a card that said Tua is eighth in QBR in this span. He has been good in this 5-game winning streak, right, Charles? So I just want to demystify this for me. QBR this whole season, pardon me. Demystify this for me. Like, should the Dolphins be looking elsewhere as future drafts are concerned?
I don't think that they should like just be totally fine with like, all right, well, we got Tua, we're just going to keep this moving forward. Like, I don't think, because to me Tua is someone where you like you have the good stretches, but excuse me, ultimately like he's kind of a quarterback where you get stuck in purgatory. Like, you're never bad enough to, you know, get that top one pick, but never good
the
enough.
The treadmill of mediocrity,
right?
As they
like
call
the
it.
Andy Dalton zone. Like, I kind of think that that's where Tua's head a little bit. So I don't think that you're that you need to like move on from him, obviously, because he's had success this past month and you're figuring out ways for him to be productive. But at the same time, like if something better comes along, I would hope that the Dolphins maybe have a little bit more foresight than some other teams and say, all right, Tua's not bad, but we can do better. I don't know who that would be at this point in time. You know, I think the Deshaun Watson situation has obviously made that a little bit tougher for them. But I also don't think that, you know, if you're walking into 2022 with Tua as a starting quarterback, at this point, you're not really feeling bad about that. It's just more about, can we get more out of this? Can we squeeze a little bit more out of the quarterback position? And that's the question that the Dolphins have to ask themselves.
Yeah, I think just what you said, they can be a little more calm about the situation if they do swing on some of those big fish. Because, like, we know the Deshaun situation. I mean, hell, that was mid-season this year. We had two around the trade deadline, clearly understanding he was not the most loved guy in the building. So that message got sent loud and clear a long time ago. But there's going to be a number of quarterbacks that could potentially be jostled out of their position as veterans in this league. And Miami should swing at all of them. Like, take your shot there, especially with what you've got built around. And if not, like, obviously, like, this is kind of like quarterback agnostic. You got to do some things this offseason to fix that O-line in a hurry. You've got to go out there and try and find some veterans that can stabilize that thing, because betting on the young guys you've spent draft capital on has not worked. You have not been able to develop them, and that's got to change, because no matter who goes there, like, if you're going to try and lure Russell Wilson away from Seattle, you want him to walk in. That's why I laugh when people brought up the Giants. You want him to walk into the same situation he's leaving, where, yeah, you got some nice weapons, but still no one to protect you here. That doesn't really sound like what Russ is looking for at this point in his career. So I think they've got some systemic things they got to fix there. But Tua's seat isn't safe, and it shouldn't be based on what we've seen.
Mm. So just last thing, where do the Dolphins fans on Twitter rank in terms of most terrifying hive to upset? Because I talked about Tua on Around the Horn last week for like 15 seconds and was already terrified.
Well, I think a bad sign is that some of them have started calling themselves Tuanon. So I think that right. says just about everything you need to know about where they are in terms of their love for Tua Tagovailoa. So, you know, I think I'm going to take a page out of our friends at Le Batard Show and say that Tua is the greatest quarterback he's ever seen. I love him more than my own family and Dolphins plans.
Yep.
If you're listening to this, please take it easy on me on Twitter, because I don't want the smoke.
Yeah.
You know what?
Good point.
I don't give a damn about their smoke, because I went through this with Dolphins weirdo O-line Twitter last year, where for some reason they got mad at like me and Mina and Jeff Schwartz for telling them the truth. And I have since come to live long enough to see myself be the hero in this instance, where now I'm getting the apologies that I was richly deserving this time last year. So this will eventually will out. You guys don't have to be so weird about this stuff.
I love that the Dolphins O-line is the equivalent of like JFK Jr. is alive and he's showing up.
See, this
was so weird.
It was weird. But see, this is why I maintain that as a Falcons fan, you know, every fan base needs to go through something like a 28-3, just so your hopes are just shattered forever. So now, like, when the Falcons, someone tells me, oh, the Falcons suck, I'm like, yeah, I know that. So what? I'm still going to watch next Sunday. You can't hurt me, because they've hurt me more than you possibly could. Dolphins fans, you got to find your 28-3 and go through that, and you'll be a better person for it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's wisdom from a young person well beyond his years, Alabaster. I assume you also feel that way trying to moderate this show. Just have your soul broken by Dominique Foxworth, like in your first week. And then thereafter, you're sort of just like used to it.
Just got to eradicate hope. It's the only way to live.
That's right.
All right. Our next one. Last week, LeBron was fined $15,000 for doing a big balls dance after the Lakers win. For me, winning is enough. Why do you need to do a stupid, childish dance and disrespect the other team on the court? It doesn't make sense. Goats don't dance. And your choices are A, Pat Riley, B, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, C, Michael Jordan, or D, Enes Kanter-Freedom.
All right. So, God. Wait, before I get into this, is there a video of this or no, Alabaster?
Yes, there is.
There is? Okay. So I know the answer to this, guys. It is shockingly not Enes Kanter-Freedom, who is out here trying to become right-wing Colin Kaepernick in ways that are going to be remarkably effective abdicating a position of rationality in favor of just like trolling famous people on the internet, despite having like valid points about autocratic societies. Mm-hmm. But the answer to this, shockingly, well, not shockingly necessarily, due to his generation, is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I say we listen to him. Give us the opportunity to pay our respects to him by listening before we just totally make fun of everything that he just said.
Then last week, LeBron was fined $15,000 for doing a big ball stance after the Lakers win over the Pistons. For me, winning is enough. Why do you need to do a stupid, childish dance and disrespect the other team on the court? It doesn't make sense. Goats don't dance.
So many elements of that, starting with Kareem.substack.com, make me feel like I am inhabiting a dystopia.
I mean, who cares? I don't know. That's how I kind of feel about this. I thought it was funny. I didn't really think that anyone was going to get charged.
Master of 3 points. Charles. I had forgotten that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was on Dancing with the Stars. I had forgotten that.
I actually didn't know that.
My frustrations here, like, not only do goats, the animals, like, dance literally, there are plenty of videos of goats dancing. Goats also literally have big balls. Like, these are all facts that are verified in the animal kingdom. Like, Google it.
What is happening today?
Don't Google it.
Science
is
happening.
Old man Pablo went off the rails as soon as we started the show. Do not Google that. You don't have to listen to him.
Just go on incognito mode. You'll not get the ads that Gojo has served if you do that. And then you can there it is.
Yeah. Please God. I will say this. This is also like very interesting coming from the guy that I watched get a compound fracture in the bathroom on Dave.
Yeah, no, like, yeah, that's true. I did just catch up on season 2 of Dave. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar goes from like great sense of humor to apparently zero sense of humor. And part of me wonders, like, could he be trolling? Is there a part of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar that is doing this to troll? And if so, Kareem, I've underestimated you because you're really mastering the algorithm here. Criticizing LeBron for the Sam Cassell dance is chef's kiss of like, let me get some views.
Yeah. Goats don't dance. Like I wonder how he feels about like Michael Jordan just in general. If he feels, you know, LeBron was pushing it too much with his big balls dancing against the Pistons. My only thing with LeBron is like, you guys kind of stink. Can we do that against like the Warriors or something like that? I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit of old man in me, but I thought the dance was funny, but against the Pistons, like, come on. We came a little bit higher than that. Let's troll some real people that need some trolling.
Yeah, Jeremy Grant, not necessarily deserving of the Sam Cassell big ball.
I do like Pablo's theory that this is Kareem trolling because this registers at the sweet spot on the retired player airing grievances about a star. Because like this hasn't reached like sadness of Scottie Pippen trying to talk about the low back game status as opposed to the flu game. This is right in the sweet spot of like, all right, you're just making fun of him for being out here, like being a fun young person, which we can all buy as a general criticism from Pablo's old community. So that checks out. Like he hit the sweet spot.
Listen, if you presented me with a checklist and on it was, says LeBron isn't the real GOAT, criticizes dancing and has a Substack, I'm thinking this is all a work, right? Like this is not real. Like this is somebody who is doing this with a strategy. And I am dismayed that Kareem, who I think is amazing, is. I'm sorry, Kareem. Guess what? You've lost my vote.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're heartbroken by that. And his Cantor and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar have both betrayed me in ways that I did not anticipate in the last month. Alabaster, are you also heartbroken by this?
I am. So heartbroken that we're going to move on to a different game. And that game, if then, we give you a conditional statement. You finish it. And our first one. If the Patriots beat the Bills on the road tonight, then blank.
Then I guess we'll be feeling an impending sense of doom as the Patriots are once again one of the best teams in the NFL. The defense is just absolutely smashing people in the mouth. Mac Jones is playing efficient football. And it's like that same like boring brand of Patriots football that has gotten them very far, and it feels a little bit bleak. But I've kind of gotten to like Mac Jones a little bit, so I'm hoping that he can kind of keep this rolling. But man, like we're right back here, one year off, and now the Patriots are right back at the top of the AFC.
Yes, if the Patriots beat the Bills tonight, then I got to apologize to my wife, because my wife Liz, who is from Boston, pays zero attention to football and just always assumes the Patriots are the best team because we had two decades of that. And every time she brings this up, because she has like a Patriots logo credit card, even though she knows nothing else about football, I have to explain to her that actually she's missed a lot. A lot's happened. You know, like there's all these complicated things that have happened in the time that you've stopped paying attention because Tom Brady, blah, blah, blah. And no, actually, it turns out you can do our job just as well by going to sleep for years and waking up and just betting on Bill Belichick.
Yeah, if they win tonight, parity is a myth, and the only thing that matters are Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. They are the sun and moon, and until they depart this plane for that plane, it will be that way, and you will never go wrong betting on them to win anything of value.
Yeah, and I do think, like, just kind of looking back, I don't know how surprised we should be at this Patriots season, because last year they went 7-9 with, like, honestly one of the worst group of offensive skill players that IFC, and Cam Newton wasn't great last year. Like, and they still, you know, they blew out the Chargers last year, and they were still, based on the 7-seed format, like had a chance there at the end with a pretty, you know, bare group of players, I would say. And then you get Hightower back, you have players in free agency, you get upgraded in the passing game, and of course they're right back at the top of the AFC, and it's annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. Go. I mean, wait, but you've come around on Mac Jones, Charles. Was that difficult?
Well, I mean, a little bit, just because I was just like, if he had gone to any other team, I would have been like all aboard this, but I just wanted to see something different. But I was a little bit concerned with Mac at first, because it was just a different style of offense going from Alabama to New England, where you go to Alabama and it's just like wide receiver centric, and why wouldn't it be? Then you playing with Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, Devonta Smith, four first round picks or what have you. And then this offense, it was just from the look of it at the start of the season, it looked like they're going to be a little bit more tight end heavy, just based on where they had put money in free agency. And that was just kind of a different offense that he had played in college. But to give him credit, like, I think it's been really impressive how he's been able to kind of blend what he was doing at Alabama into just personnel he has with the Patriots. And like, if I'm a Patriots fan, I think I'm a little bit concerned about like how high the ceiling is on Mac Jones. Like, how far is this going to go over the next, you know, 5-6 years? But just to start off, like, this has been a really impressive year for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Our ever-present soul-crushing reminder that as much as we all love and want to buy into talent, 90% of this, especially with the quarterbacks at the top of the draft, is to land in a place that has the stuff that can actually make you sustainable and give you room to grow. Because otherwise, you end up like our poor sweet son Trevor down there in Jacksonville toiling away with Urban Meyer. God bless that poor lad.
Shout out to Trevor Lawrence for just like not leading to any like leaked sources, say, you know, like Trevor Lawrence is miserable in Jacksonville yet. Because my God, it would be justified at this point, Alabaster.
All right, guys. It's time for some bonus topics.
Bonus topics?
Yeah. And this first one comes from our friend Mike, Michael, or Mikey, who said, "Good morning, Charles, and welcome to Debatable. And in the spirit of friendly trolling, I have to point out that your camera angle at times makes it look like you're wearing a propeller hat."
Incredible. Good tweet.
Oh, wow.
A good tweet. Look, Michael or Mikey.
It's cool outside, but I'm a former lineman. I get hot sometimes even when it's cold outside, so I got to keep this thing running 24/7. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
But you know what it is?
Of course funny, you're a lineman.
One year for Halloween when I was in college, I did dress up as Little Bill, and I had this exact sack spinner hat when I was running around shotgunning beers all across the dance floor.
Oh. Wow.
Lord. That's a great. I didn't even notice that. My eyesight, again, my age has prevented me from noticing these things.
Oh, there does have to be a market, by the way, if you were to like get someone to animate all of the cartoons of our youth into some sort of like party at whatever their current age would be now to see Little Bill shotgun a beer somewhere. Like,
I tell you what, one of the best costumes from that day was one of my best friends. He dressed up as Snorlax and he just laid on the floor in the door in front of the party for the entire night.
Oh,
that,
Lord.
That is understanding the assignment in a way that very few people before or after ever will.
Yeah, that's no great. Notes. That's great. The worst costume a friend of mine ever dressed up as was a member of the Blue Man Group in a room with very poor lighting. And so it seemed like we almost got one of those controversies that led me to absolutely leave the room immediately.
Yeah, nope. You just gotta cannonball your way out of
it. It's
that
blue, I explained from 50 feet away. Alabaster, please get us out of this.
Okay, our next one. Gojo, this one's coming to you.
Oh, boy.
A lot of people were a little concerned from the personal metaphors earlier in the show. We want you to know it's a safe space if there's anything you need to get off your chest. But Joan Lewis tweeted, when Gojo said Minshew is the guy your GF cheated with, it felt personal. Anything you have to get off your chest?
Oh, no. He just fits a character type here. Listen, like...
That wasn't very convincing.
We're good on that front here.
That wasn't very convincing.
I'm just saying, man, I can tell you, I never got dogged out like that. Like, if you like... We don't got to get into it. I can make some phone calls, but...
No, I mean, I don't know if we have the archival clip of Mike Golick Jr. declaring that he had sex in college, but he has established that on the record on this program before, so...
That's the thing, man. We got receipts that we can pull around here, all right?
Wow.
My bona fides are in the streets here. Thank you, Isaiah McKenzie, for trying to spread slander that led to me having to talk about my sexual prowess on air, all right? I'm dare
just,
you.
Just
still.
A very earnest, oh, congratulations from Charles. Yes, that is the appropriate response.
A quite literal congrats on the sex.
Yeah, there
we
go.
All right, our last topic comes from a friend of the show, Long Live the Queen. And she tweeted,
oh, come on.
Pablo is so old that he, fell asleep during the Ravens game, is older than Marcus Freeman, rambled about goat testicles, and wore these jeans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pablo, you have now finally become the person your jeans always wanted you to be.
Yeah, what's extra worrisome is that, like, I spent my weekend throwing around an Aerobee, which is a rubber ring that's lighter than a Frisbee, which I throw around with my friend every weekend in the park because, again, I'm a dad who is very old, and now I feel like I frayed my rotator cuff. And so I just have a lot of just, like, it's not good for me right now, guys. It's just really not good for me.
I mean, it sounds like you're really going through it, man.
Yeah, and as always, like, I'm sorry, Nissan. Which paid me to promote that truck. Because all you've gotten out of this is roasts that are honestly very, very dangerous to the social media branding that I think you paid me to promote. So I will not refund your money, but I do understand that this is not what you bargained for.
What do you mean? They don't like the fact that Ennis Cantor Freedom is hitting you up asking where you got those jeans? We can close it down, everybody, man. And I'll go home now.
Jesus. I have so many more things to say about Ennis Cantor Freedom.
All of them
lead me to jokes about my jeans. Yeah. Like Ennis Cantor Freedom making his talk show debut on my jeans' favorite show. Yeah. Wasn't great.
You want to start to end the show the way you started, Pablo?
Oh, God. I mean, do I have a fucking choice at this point?
Pablo!
Woo! Yeah!
Woo! Now speaking
of, I hope that wasn't in one of the webinars that I did not complete. Don't do that.
It wasn't me, Papa Mickey! It wasn't me!